to Paper Money, the bi-weekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Niagara to Ninja Burger, Rio Grande Games to Steve Jackson Games. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is January 14th, 2011.
Woohoo! Welcome to 2011, folks.
I know, and I nailed it, actually. I was worried all week that we were going to do, I was going to say 2010.
Well, you'll get around to it at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. Probably around December of this year. I was told, by the way, I should stop saying anyways as much as I have, so I'm going to make a point of trying to say it as much as humanly possible in this show, just so you know.
So anyways, let's keep going.
Anyways, yeah, I think you're right. So, we took a couple weeks off, and I'd like to say thank you very much, listeners in the wide world out there, for giving us a couple weeks off. We've been doing the show. This is our 42nd episode, and we had not taken a break. We'd done a show every 2 weeks, and I got to tell you, it was nice around the holidays to take a little time off. So thank you everyone for bearing with us. I enjoyed my New Year's Eve not having to do a podcast.
That was very nice, not having to do a podcast for New Year's Eve. Tops on my list for things I didn't do on New Year's Eve.
Exactly. But anyways, hey, real quick show preview. We're going to have a little bit of news. We're not going to have a guest this week. We're going to talk about our 2010 year in review very briefly. And then we're going to move right into our predictions for 2011. Because really, that's what we're here for, folks.
This week, that's what we're here for. I'm thinking we missed some good theme music opportunity there again. Twilight Zone or something.
You are all about the theme music. For some
reason, I am. I'm all about that. I'm that level of audio. You know, kill me on anything else, I'm a Luddite. But, you know, music,
You know, for someone who thinks GarageBand is the group of kids next door,
in my neighborhood.
Placing an awful lot of demands on my post-production ability here. So let's move on. Real quick in the news, it's been basically 4 weeks since the last show. We had Christmas in there. We had New Year's in there. We've had a couple of new titles come out. But the big news was the debut of BoardGameInfo.com. This story is from the Purple Pawn, and I'm sure most of you listening to the show have already read about it or even been to the site. BoardGameInfo.com is James Math's website that he's starting to do. And it's, I don't want to say compete with BoardGameGeek.com, but realistically, that's the target audience. So let me read you the PurplePawn.com article. BGI builds on already existing and comprehensive framework used for James' RPG host network of sites, right? He does RPG.net, which already has a sizable database of board and card game information. Of course, nowhere near as comprehensive as BGG's just yet. But that's what the beta period is for. They're looking for help adding reviews, games, ratings, etc. BGI is also partnering with sites to add content. Note, one of those partners will be the Purple Pawn. BGI's mission statement expresses its goals, and let me run through those. They want a clean front page, prominent multimedia reviews, strong emphasis on services for retailers such as UPC codes, direct sales, forums, etc. They won't run ads from online discounters, which I think is interesting, and prominent news feeds and an events calendar. Rhett, any comment? Is the world ready for another board game geek type?
You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, look at the internet. The internet can absorb tons and tons of stuff because there's always people looking for more. You can never give people enough options, I think, in the current modern world, at least in the West. I like this one's format, at least conceptually. I'm waiting to see how user-friendly it is. One of the things that I like about The Geek is it's a fast way when you're stuck trying to figure out if, you know, there's a title that you're trying to deal with in the gaming world and nothing else is coming up with it. The Geek will tell you a lot about it. It also misses some critical information that's easy to access for retailers. And, you know, this is talking about a retailer-friendly type of site. Mm-hmm. So having things like fast ISBNs and retail prices, you know, actual MSRPs,
right.
I think is, you know, really going to be handy for, you know, where we need to go as a retailer. If, you know, you're sitting there looking for a game for a, you know, for a customer, and frankly, you know, brick and mortar stores, for the most part, all have computers. Not say every single one of them, but, you know, if it follows the norm, probably around 90% of them. And to be able to go over and have a customer ask you about a game that you've never heard of, pop it up quickly and say, oh, yeah, I can get that.
I think that's hard to monetize. That's, I guess, here's my thing. The idea of a leaner, meaner board game geek, and again, I apologize to Board Game Info for referring to them that way, I guess. The idea, though, of another board game repository that maybe is a little less geeky than Board Game Geek is a great idea. The thing that I'm concerned about is that they're going to be brick-and-mortar friendly. The problem is brick-and-mortar game stores don't advertise online.
No.
And so you're immediately limiting yourself to publishers and manufacturers of games who do advertise heavily online. However, by not doing online discounters or online salespeople, I don't want to say you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, but I do think that that's interesting from a revenue perspective.
Well, and, you know, the thing I'll give him here is this is not his first foray into this general format. You know, no. He's done RPG. I'm guessing he has a good idea about what he's going to be able to look at finance-wise, cost-wise, to make this viable for him. So, you know, I'll give him it. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here. I think, the first question you had was, does the universe need another review place for board games? And, you know, my response to still is, yeah, of course.
And realistically, James runs RPG.net. BoardGameGeek.com recently launched Geekdo, right? And started coverage on RPGs. Does James have a choice but to go and do BoardGameInfo.com? And I think the answer from that perspective is, yeah, I think you got to do it if BoardGameGeek is going to start moving into RPGs.
Yeah, I mean, they're becoming competitive in other ways. This, I think, just branches to full competition between the two. Yeah. And frankly, since most of this content is provided by
the same people,
fans, well, no. By fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so these are reviews and things like that. And, you know, there are going to be different fan bases who are going to line up over one versus another, which gives people the option to see different reviews. I think that's a great thing, because like with any good review, the answer is you have to find a reviewer of your own personal taste or on the exact opposite extreme of your personal taste, so that when you look at the review, you know how to balance it. You know that when you see it, you know, if you agree with the guy normally, that, you know, you're going to agree with what he said about this last piece. Or if you totally disagree with the guy, then again, you're going to look at it and you're going to go, oh, well, you know, you hated this one. You hated the last one I loved. I'm going to go look at it.
All right. So let's move on. Angry Birds is coming to a board game near you, courtesy of Mattel. Oh my God, if I had one more review or discussion of this game in my inbox, I was literally about to hurl my laptop across the room. It's Angry Birds. It's a board game. I'm sure it will do well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure being that it's a board game, since the electronic version is already out there and doing so well. I have a hard time imagining why people would cross over, but it is still Angry Birds, and it is the rage. So,
as someone who is a rabid iPhone fan who doesn't have Angry Birds installed, I'll take a pass on the board game too. But kudos for Mattel for rushing it out there. I mean, Angry Birds has been, I mean, really, for a major company, Angry Birds took off basically last year, so the production cycle on it was fairly quick. Kudos for them for getting it out. On the other hand, it's more mass market stuff. Give me Civilization, the board game. Yeah, that's the computer game I want that's adapted. So, oh, but I digress. Anyways, let's, oh, I said anyways again. Quick, edit that out in post.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I digressed again. Let's talk about our commentary. Last show, I wanted to say last week.
Yeah.
Our last show, we reviewed our 2010 predictions, and we went point by point through them and asked ourselves how they stacked up. We did actually very well. However, there were a couple of points that we need to address. Okay, one, we both thought Mindflex had completely disappeared, and we were very wrong about this. It is nowhere to be seen in our universe, but apparently on Amazon.com, this game is still in the top 100. Not top 100 games, mind you. This is the top 100 products on Amazon. So I completely missed Mindflex as a cultural phenom.
Yeah, the interesting thing is I didn't see it in any local retail stores, and that's the big box stores looking for it even.
I haven't heard it mentioned since last Christmas.
No, did not see any television advertising it or anything, so maybe that's it. Maybe that's why Amazon's doing it. Maybe they got an exclusive on this. I'm really in the dark on this. I don't want to say, this has me baffled as to why it would be that well. It's just off the radar for some reason.
I don't know. It was an expensive game, too. So if they're doing well with it, it doesn't have to move amazing numbers for them to rack up some dollars on it. That said, I got it wrong. So it is out there still, and it is apparently doing well. The other thing that created, there was a bit of a kerfluffle, as it were.
Oh, a kerfluffle.
Yeah, I would say the blogosphere, but really I don't think we got any mentions on blogs. The Twitterosphere got into a bit of a kerfluffle regarding our commentary on RPGs in 2010. Now, basically, what I had said was that the big story in RPGs in 2010 was that Pathfinder was still selling neck and neck with D&D.
I think that's why our customer, our listener base, I should say, misunderstood what our point was.
Well, what happened? Yes, people interpreted this as me saying, and maybe to exaggerate a point, I was saying that really there wasn't anything else big going on in RPGs. What I meant was that the ground didn't shift and a beam of light comes down from the heavens. There were other things going on. Obviously, D&D Essentials came out. We had the Warhammer license stuff from FFG doing well.
Yeah, both Warhammer and Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, and so there were other things going on. By the way, after the little kerfluffle, I did go look it up, and Dresden Files, much to my chagrin, was listed as one of the top five selling. It was, in fact, the fifth best selling RPG, according to ICV2. In the third quarter of 2010. So there were other things going on in the RPG market. We were trying to hit the highlights. If someone tells me that there's a bigger story than the 35-year dominance of Dungeons & Dragons coming to an end, please let me know. That said...
2011, where we might just find one.
Wait, there's more. And...
Oh.
I know, I won't say we were attacked for our journalistic ethos. However, people did ask that we provide proof that Pathfinder was doing as well as it is. And again, courtesy of Robert Miller over at Purple Pawn, ICV2 sales numbers, Pathfinder and D&D are neck and neck. And there are individual retailers who have blogged about their Pathfinder sales and D&D sales being neck and neck, with Pathfinder actually turning slightly higher in terms of the number of turns. And Rhett, I know your experience at the store is that Pathfinder is doing quite well, certainly neck and neck with, if not better than, D&D.
Well, in order to avoid controversy, we'll just go with neck and neck.
Yes. And again, to me, that's the story. Traditionally, it's in the fantasy market, right? In the fantasy RPG market, there was D&D, which was about a mile high, and then the next guy down was about knee high.
Yeah, I was going to
And
say, you know, at third edition sales being somewhere in the million units in the first year, no one was touching those kind of numbers. And
correct.
it's not doing those numbers now.
Correct. Like I said, and it's interesting to see how that is playing out. Not to so yes, there were other stories going on. And certainly, by the way, and I did feel bad because I didn't mention this, the FFG Warhammer 40K stuff did quite well. I should mention, but again, I did mention that because I was focusing on the big stuff. So, for those of you out there in the on the internets, as our former president liked to call them, bite me. No, I'm just teasing. So yeah, we were paying attention to that other stuff, but we wanted to hit the other that was the big
Our
story.
story, I was going to say, we were trying to emphasize our story as opposed to, unfortunately, appears to that was all that there was going on.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that Rhett and I are pundits, not journalists. That means we can say whatever we want, and if we're wrong, it doesn't matter. I crack myself up if no one else. Anyways, oh, I'm gonna have to get a quarter jar every time I say anyways.
Oh, it's going to be one of those days. 2011, the year of
I'm just
anyway.
finding a hard I'm having a hard time segueing without saying anyways.
Yeah, it's because it's so ingrained into you. You don't even
You
recognize
know,
you're
you're
doing
my
it.
co-host and you never brought it up. It took a listener to complain. So,
Well, that's because I've heard you do it for something like 20 years.
yeah, okay, that could be it too. All right, well, let's move on to 2011. Now that we've recapped our 2010 recap, let's move on to our 2011 preview. Now, Rhett, exactly. Now, Rhett, I want to start out with, we'll do what we did with 2010. I want to start out with the industry as a whole and then go through things category by category. And then we had two readers who sent in their predictions for 2011. So we're going to, after we do our stuff, we're going to read their stuff as well and pick it to shreds or laud it as warranted.
Okay,
All
so
right.
let's go. First up, because right now I'm almost sure we're going to start by a disagreement at the beginning. So let's go.
Okay, industry as a whole up. I'm going to say we're going to see anywhere from 8 to 12% growth for the game industry as a whole. I think we're going to see more $100 games, and that's really, those are my big predictions, I guess, for the industry as a whole. Is we're going to be up. We're going to see more $100 games. I also have, well, I have some other stuff I want to talk about too, but that's more of our board game thing. So, right, industry
Once we
as a
get to
whole,
categories, yeah.
yeah.
As a whole, I'm gonna really take a stretch here. I don't think the industry is just gonna be up. I think this is gonna be the banner year for the industry. I think this is gonna be a big upswell in 2011. The only downside to that is versus the U.S. economy, which I've been told is recovered. So, having talked to 12 unemployed people today who have been employed for the past 20 some odd years. I guess that recovery is happening and not in Illinois.
Yeah, it's a jobless recovery.
It's a jobless recovery. Yeah, and my taxes just went up approximately $12,000 or $1,200 additionally per year,
Yes.
thanks to the state of Illinois, who now has the highest taxes for income in the country.
Yes.
Anyway, off topic there. I still think we're going to see the banner year. I think this is going to be a really big year because I think there are a couple of really cool things hiding right around the corner.
Okay, now we'll talk about those really cool things when we get into our categorical stuff. You're right. I think the economy, though, is going to play less of a factor. The only wild card I see in terms of a majorly up year, okay, and to say, 20% up or even 15% up, is whether or not euros break out into the mainstream, and or the Hasbro slash Mattel folks come up with a game of their own that is Euro-esque. Does this make sense?
I think we're going to see that. I honestly do. I don't think Mattel's already showing that they're interested with the Angry Birds. Not quite Euro-esque, but that they're interested in games again. Mattel has not been interested in games for a number of years. And I think that's going to prompt Hasbro, and I think Hasbro is going to look at its Euro market because it owns enough people out there who are the Euro market that they're going to start spinning stuff into their mainstream.
It's funny you should use the word spin, because I was going to say, really, you know, the one wild card for the game industry in the year 2011, Stratega. From Spin Masters. Oh, but I tease the folks at Spin Masters. I'm sure Stratego will rock my socks when they reintroduce.
You're gonna love the new package.
I'm sure it'll be completely different in terms of gameplay as well. All right, let's move on. Let's start out with role playing games. That way, I can offend people early in the show.
Time to go. Yeah. Why wait? You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you angry. That way, you know, if you start out angry, you'll just be more visceral when it gets down to all the other stuff.
That's right. That's right. And since you're not sending emails directly to the show, you're just Twittering them, I know that your comments will only be 180 characters or less. That said, Rhett, why don't you start out with RPGs? You're our RPG strong guy. So let's hit us with what your take on the RPG market is for 2011.
All right. I'm going to spin at the very end of this. I'm going to constantly use that there is a wild card out there. Okay. And I'm not going to spin my wild card until the very end of the whole thing. But on the RPG market, I don't think we're going to see any big breakout games in 2011 in the sense of there will be no new 5th edition, there will be no new globally uber RPG, mm-hmm. with one possible exception coming later. And what I do predict, though, is that we will see a lot of experimentation from all sorts of level companies. I think that we're going to see small companies doing a lot of RPG experimentation. I think we're going to see mid-level RPG experimentation. I think we're going to see high-end company experimentation. There's people here who I think are going to be trying really different stuff. I think there's people who are going to have moderate expectations for what their RPGs do, but giving more choices to the RPG players. I think that we're going to see a lot of people playing different games, more different games, instead of just we're going to yank out our Pathfinder, or we're going to yank out our 4th edition. You know, we're going to play four or five different role-playing games regularly, I think is what we're going to see in 2011. Because they'll be interesting.
Okay, so we're gonna see a lot of new interesting stuff, but no breakouts, right?
No, I don't think there'll be a breakout. And as I said, I have one wild card, and okay. I'll talk about that at the end. There is one wild card that could change everything.
Okay, well, now that's but my story for some time was that when D20 went down, okay, when they pulled OGL, that it was going to take a while, but we were going to start to see a creative resurgence in the role-playing game market as people moved away from the D20 system and started doing their own systems again. So it should be interesting to see if that happens or not. I hope it does. I know we have some friends, Ivan, I'm talking to you, who are huge on indie role-playing games, and they really love these quirky little systems and things like that, everything from was it Dogs Al Fresco or whatever to anything you could think of.
Dogs in the Field, is it, or something like that?
You know, I'm sure we'll get emails on it. The long story short is that one of my predictions for the RPG market, and it kind of dovetails nicely into what you're saying, is the continued growth of the PDF market. And that is the new way to break into the RPG market. And it has been for the last couple of years. I think we're going to see that grow, and let me tell you why. As retailers are now stocking, they're stocking deep on Pathfinder. You still got to carry D&D. There are not the third party, it's not so much third party stuff, but it used to be you'd also stock, you know, all the Green Ronin, right, for D20 and things like that, and you would stock
sure the hero games, yeah.
I think we're seeing a lot less of stocking deep on the other titles outside of the big sellers, right? You're going to carry the FFG. You're going to carry the new core rulebook. for Dresden Files, for instance. But you're not necessarily going to go deep. You might not carry BattleTech Time of War, right? The new BattleTech RPG. You're not going to carry necessarily Hero. Maybe you'll carry the Hero game core rulebook, but not the expansions. And I think that's going to push those guys into more and more into the PDF market.
Well, you know, and I'll go back and say I'm in agreement with you on there, and I'm in agreement for other reasons as well. At the current look of what Wizards is doing with 4th edition, a lot of stuff disappearing off their schedule, things that were on the schedule that aren't going to come out now. Mm-hmm. The question is, does virtual tabletop and the PDF market become the dominant species for what, you know, Wizards is planning to do? Do you stop printing books and just make them available as electronic things, especially if your emphasis is, like in their case, the virtual tabletop? We're going to have your computer become your game tool. You know, no longer need pencil and paper. You no longer need miniatures. You know, and here you're going to start operating on the whole electronic field. Yeah, I think the electronic part of classic role-playing game, to be confused with MMOGs, is going to start to grow as well.
Well, you know, people have been trying that for a long time with the virtual tabletop idea, and it never has quite blossomed, right? There's been tools around really since the middle 90s to do that kind of thing, and none of them have ever supplanted, shall we say.
Yeah. I think the economics is what's going to drive this one.
We'll have to see. Let me put it this way. I don't think 2011 is the year that happens, but we'll see. It might be the year that gains some serious traction. Let's move on, though, to board games. And I'll talk about board games for that being, you know, my strong suit. One, I think board games are still going to be king of the hill in terms of what's driving sales and new product anticipation. Dollar for dollar, I still think that I think you're going to see it at Gen Con again this year, that it is going to be about the board games. I think with the I don't use this term derisively, only descriptively, but with the Ameritrash titles, I don't think we're going to see any new big hits in 2011. I also think that we are going to see something interesting from AEG, probably on the board game front, maybe on the card game front. I don't know. But that's my prediction, in particular on AEG. Settlers is still going to sell really well. Rio Grande, I want to see what they do. And the reason is Dominion, after its umpteenth expansion, I don't want to say it's done, but it's no longer the next big thing. So we'll have to see what goes on there. But in general, and by the way, one of our readers points this out in his prediction. This is Alan. We references something that this as well. Just so you know, Alan, I was thinking about it before I got your letter. I didn't steal it. There's still going to be a boatload of titles out.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that we're going to see more discretion on the consumer part, more discretion on the retailer part, but just more and more titles being published. It's too big a field too successful a field still for people not to be publishing. I think that we're going to continue to see players who have not participated before join into this. This is a growth field and people know it. As far as a breakout title is concerned, you know, I always have my expectations out for somebody coming out with a breakout title in the Euro games, simply because it's never all been done before. A lot of times it hasn't been put together it's being put together, I should say, in a new way. And because the consumers want it. That's my big one here. So consumers are going to be trying stuff. They're going to be looking for something. Someone just has to put the nuts and bolts together in the correct order, and there will be another big, big game for 2011. Now, it's going to be heavily overshadowed, I think, just by volume. there's a lot of noise going to be out there. But flip back to our earlier statements here. The electronic media, I think, is really good on this. People are seeing all sorts of information. And again, Alan pointed this out himself. There's tons of information available before a product's even in print for people to have an idea what the style of the game is, what it's kind of about, and is it something they're interested in?
I think that is a double-edged sword.
I agree.
Because we talked about this before. Zev released, 38 titles last year?
Something on that, yeah.
Did Earth Reborn make it out before the end of the year? I think it might
be 39. Yes, Earth Reborn made it just before the end of the year. I think it came out the week before Christmas.
Yeah. The long story short, with that kind of market saturation, we know that there's going to be, quite frankly, if you're looking to get into the game industry, right, if you can sell 1,500 of something, you can be in the game industry, okay? And I still think on the low end, if you know what you're doing at all, you can sell 1,500 board games if it's a decent title. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of titles come out this year, but this is the year that the wave crests in terms of number of titles.
Right. I think that we're going to definitely, I think what's going to happen is the backlash from consumers and retailers. One of the problems retailers are having right now is they're going to have to be more and more selective. They're going to have to be selective on the restock. They're going to have to be selective on bringing in new titles. They're overwhelmed, and unlike simple role-playing books, you know, which don't take up a lot of shelf space, board games take up an enormous amount of product space.
Yes.
And that's going to cause, like I say, that's going to cause a partial backlash as the
And you're also dealing with a price point that's much higher.
And a higher,
well, let's say
I don't know about much higher, but certainly a bit higher. The average RPG product that we're seeing nowadays is still in the $30 to $35 range. That doesn't compare unfavorably to the $40 board game.
Well,
we are still seeing the $50 and the $100 board game as the norm.
Yeah, the 60 is the new 40 in terms of the board games. But one of the things you said in the pre-show, Rhett, really struck a chord with me, and I want to make sure we get it out there. This is the year that you start seeing big discounts, not so much immediately, but quickly on board
early
games.
Discounting. Yeah, yeah. I think what we'll see is that people need the space. They're going to still take the risks, but when it doesn't pan out, they're, you know,
yep.
The cool game of the week doesn't pan out to be the cool game of the week. They're going to be discounting them fast to make their dollars back as quickly as possible, get their liquidity up, and also to get out there and grab those new games. Because I do think we're still going to see publishers going very hot and heavy on this line. And there's a lot of them out there. You know, let's not discount. Fantasy Flight, you know, we talked about, was there any one big success? And I kind of agree with you. There was no single success, but there was so much support product. Fantasy Flight, you know, put out two very successful expansions this year for the Battlestar Galactica. Oh, Battlestar Galactica board game. Put out a number of expansions for some of their other games. Did a lot of experimentation with the $100 board games like a Napoleonic, which sold out right away. Z-Man, again, expansions for Agricola. You know, what I noticed that was left off of the 29 big success. You know, the new classic game. If you'd ask people in 28, you know, was anybody going to ever come up with a game that mattered compared to, let's say, Rio Grande's Puerto Rico, you'd have had people go, well, no, it's a great game. Why would there, you know, how would you come up and improve on that? Someone did.
Yeah.
So I don't think any of these markets are down. I still think we're going to see more and more people doing this card construction game going, even though I am.
You're talking about deck building stuff like Dominion and Ascension.
Dominions and the Essentials. I still think people are going to try to capitalize on that. Some people behind the curve there, and maybe they'll come up with a, you know, because the answer to me on that one is right genre. If you link your thing to the right either licensing or some cool new spin on it. People like that game.
Ooh, boy, Rhett, that's the next big thing. A licensed deck building game.
Hey,
Resident Evil just came out. Never mind.
We'll get there.
Maybe a better license than that. Anyways.
All right. Anyway, I think we've covered that.
Okay. Let's talk about CCGs. And Rhett, I'm going to let you go first. I think this is going to be a fairly quick review on the CCG market, but hit it.
CCGs. Yeah. Continued spiraling downwards. Bakugan, the movie. Bakugan's already collectible. I don't see him spitting it into a collectible card game. Sorry, Bakugan. From what I understand, there's just been a big release now for the new Warcraft card game expansion out there. Again, if it wasn't for the Warcraft players looking for the chase cards, I know in my local, this is a non-happening game. No one plays it. All they do is consume it so that they can do something cool online. Magic, I don't see, is breaking out any new ground, which means it's a little longer, a little older in the tooth. L5R, same situation. I know that you have a little spin on that one, so I'll let you take it from there.
I have a spin on L5R.
On L5R, well, specifically on AEG.
Well, I kind of let that cat out of the bag in the board game section. I think Zinzer is back at AEG full time, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see AEG come up with something as a result of his renewed stewardship of his company. And I don't know if that's going to come out as L5R. Certainly, honestly, I hope they don't pour the resources into a CCG. I think the market has really basically said, we're done with CCGs for now. We love the mechanic, but we're playing Dominion. So now, my initial take, by the way, Red, was I agreed with you when I was writing this stuff down. I think we're going to continue to see that slow slide down. Magic will continue to sell well, obviously. And maybe some of the other stuff. But of course, there is that one collectible card game wild card out there that we'll mention at the end of all of the stuff, right? Is that
I think that's the best way to do it because it falls into all categories.
Exactly. So all right, let's move on to miniatures.
All right.
And now,
can I lead on this one or do you want to?
Oh, no. No, you go right ahead.
I think this may be the year for miniatures, not in terms of sales, in not terms of breakout sales. I got to wait for The Hobbit, I think, before we see the big breakout sales in miniatures. But in terms of expanding its market, seeing more people get out there, stores carrying more stuff. And the reason I feel that way is the number of players that are moving into this market. The big one there is Osprey. Osprey has a little toehold that they went in with their historical market. But this year, Osprey is launching a big venture. In April, they have the first one, which will be their Ambush Alley Force-on-Force rules combo, which is modern era. It covers Insurgents versus whatever we would refer to Western powers. And also, standard conflict against one another. But the interesting part of that is not the rule itself, but all the directions they're ready to move that one in. And that they're going to expand into a science fiction market with that game. They're going to expand into a fantasy market with some of their other stuff. They're the first new player in a long time to really give a go at a number of angles on miniatures. And I think they got a shot at getting some stuff going. Now, they're not making anything. So they're not like Privateer. When Privateer was out there and launched a rule set, it supported it with its own miniatures. If there's a lesson to be learned from Games Workshop, it's give the rules away, sell the metal, or the plastic, or whatever in this case.
But Osprey's a publishing house. They're going to publish the rules and let somebody else make money on the metal.
And they will make money on the metal, but they do have some very close ties with a number of miniatures manufacturers who I do see capitalizing on this. Battlefront has a very strong relationship with them, and I think that if if they go anywhere. Battlefront is currently looking for something new to do. They may already have found it with Osprey. They have a good partnership already. And this partnership may expand. I would not truly be surprised to see something really unusual come out of the two of them towards the end of the year.
Okay. In a word, yawn.
Oh, but wait, because you didn't let me cover my other two.
Yes, because the other two, I think, are going to dwarf the holy hell out of that. Go ahead.
Because the other two are what I think dwarfs the holy hell out of it. The first one is WizKids. WizKids is back. WizKids is just on phenomenal recovery from a company that went bankrupt, out of business. I'm not sure bankrupt is a proper statement for it. The company that got turned down, it shut off by its parent, revitalized, came out there doing really well with its superhero lines. Both the DC and Marvel lines have done well. They're back up getting the kind of numbers that they need to do, selling out of stuff the way that they have before, being somewhat conservative in not trying to expand into a zillion lines, but doing what they do well. And one of the cool ones that they have is they have the Star Trek license. They will have a Star Trek miniatures game out this year.
Bingo.
And that's a spaceship game. And there isn't anything out there right now. You know, no one has a spaceship miniatures game on the market. So this is going to help them a lot. It's something that people recognize. It's something that Paramount will have movie tie-ins to. I have not heard of a new Star Trek television series being spun, but, you know, they'll let that lay for a little while. And
yeah,
spin
I think
off
the lack of a TV or movie tie-in is going to keep this one from breaking out of the hobby market, I think, or at least far out of the hobby market.
I think for the year of 2011, it won't break too far, but it's still a well-recognized license, and from everything I understand about their license, they have all of it. So they will have the original series stuff. They will have the Next Generation. They will have the battles, Deep Space Nine.
Yes. For the first time in a long time, all of the licenses are under one roof in terms
yes.
of that.
And all of the movies, including the new early series movie.
The pouty-lipped Chris Pine Captain Kirk movie, you mean?
That would be the one. The yes. I can dangle off of anything.
Yeah, well, you know, I will say this. I think Star Trek is going to be the big miniatures thing of the year, assuming that two things. One, that the rules don't completely suck, and two, that they don't label the box from the makers of Creepy Freaks.
I think you're safe on the last one.
Yeah, I think they're still giving those away at the dollar store. Anyways, all right. So miniatures, Star Trek and Osprey stuff as our picks for what we think is going to happen in the miniatures market. I'm not going to hazard a guess as to plastic versus metal for the long-term future or what, you know, how Warhammer plays out or anything like that.
I still think it's going to be plastics. Everybody's moving towards plastics.
I don't disagree. Certainly as the price of shipping goes up, it's going to at some point it'll make sense. And the price of pewter, it, you know, when it's $8 a pound or whatever. But anyways, let's – hold on. Let me get the quarter out. War Games.
War Games. All right, here we go.
All right, here. I'll be real quick about this because there's only two companies that
– ASL's going to break out this year, right?
Yes. I think we're going to see ASL and Toys R Us at a kiosk by the register. I'm sorry. I just couldn't even say that with a straight face. I do think GMT is – they've already got one on the schedule. GMT is going to try Euro Games again. They're going to try and break out of the War Game ghetto. All right, GMT does really well in their niche, but they've got Urban Sprawl on their P500 list, which is a Euro game from Chad Jensen, who's designed a number of games for them. Dominant Species is they're already working on the reprint for that. Although I'm surprised to see it on the P500 list, I thought that was one that they were gonna just reprint immediately. In fact, I'm almost certain they made the business decision to reprint it, regardless of what the P500 numbers are right now. But I think that's going to be their story, okay? GMT is the leading war game manufacturer. I think MMP is gonna release some stuff. Maybe they'll get King and Country back out. I know there are some good ASL related titles in the mix for them. But in terms of war games, GMT is still the story.
Well, I think I really like the GMT stuff, and I won't disagree with you at all. I think at present they lead the way. I think they've got some really cool game stuff built in some of their mechanics that could be used in non-traditional war games, which I'm waiting for them to see. Effectively, I'm waiting to see them do something with the
Combat Commander.
Not the the new one that he just did. I'm sorry, I've forgotten its name now. The War on Terror.
Oh, gotcha. The more the card-based,
The card-based, somewhat solo play, somewhat two-person player game. I'm waiting to see that expand outside of the hardcore board game, historical board game, and expand into there. Avalanche, I still like my Avalanche guys. I'm not expecting Avalanche to break out this year, but I do expect Avalanche to keep going strong. I'm kind of watching Lock and Load. Lock and Load, I think, is also one of those companies that is on the brink. They do a lot of experimentation. They're doing some looking around. They do some innovative stuff, and they make a really nice product. It's a very quality, looking product and everything else.
I almost forgot. I think the other company, the other story, I think for 2011 for War Games, Conflict of Heroes is now Academy Games is now part of the Mayfair umbrella, and I think Conflict of Heroes, they've done the East Front, they're now going to do West Front, I think, coming up in 2011. So I think that might be one of the more interesting war game things that happens this year is Conflict of Heroes, West Front stuff.
I was going to say, I agree with you there, and I think the partnering with Mayfair is going to help them a lot. It's going to give them some strengths, certainly some economic abilities to buy in ways that they couldn't. And the likelihood is that they'll let them get a couple of designs, maybe an extra couple of designs out because they're partnered with Mayfair and able to keep their costs down.
Yeah. So that should be interesting. All right, moving on, war games. Let's talk about the mass market real quick. I think the mass market is still going to be a wasteland. Mattel is moving into board games, which means they're going to shake things up a little bit. But Mattel's big thing was that they were going to try and target more of the, I don't want to say adult gameplay, but they weren't going after the Hungry Hippos market. I don't know if Angry Birds does that or not. Blokus certainly did, or Blokus, or whatever the pronunciation is on that. I do see, right, we already know Settlers of Catan is in, it's in Target, it's in, it's not in Walmart, excuse me, but it's in Target, it's in some of the other mass market stores, and it's not the Gallery Edition, right, which was sort of the crippled version of it.
Right. It's the standard game.
And I think we're going to see, we might see more titles in there. Certainly Barnes & Noble and Borders have dramatically expanded their game sections at the bookstores. Most of those are still party games. Okay.
I'm still thinking, though, that, as you say, is the mass market still a wasteland? Yeah. They haven't found any. We haven't, as the game industry, found anything so earth-shaking that we're going to be able to port it over there. And frankly, that's to my way of thinking how this works. They might come out with some cool thing like the Mindflex thing where they're getting a bunch of units, but for a really above average design and cool stuff, I still think they look for this industry to come up with a cool idea and then port it over.
Yeah, and that's actually, we're going to talk about that in just a minute with some of our reader predictions. I do think the mass market will see a slight increase in game sales. I think that we're going to see more of the abstract games along the lines of Blokus. And in general, decent year for mass market. So the Lego games, by the way, the buildable games, I thought they did pretty well at Christmas. I'm not going to say they're the wave of the future, though.
Well, I don't know that they're the wave of the future, but they did so well in Europe that they brought them to the U.S. I haven't heard what their new titles, if they had new titles in Europe this year. But I'm thinking that everybody's a little, I won't say gun-shy about them breaking into the market, but that they're going to keep a closer eye on that, and they're going to try to come up with stuff. I think that that's one of the things that's going to drive Hasbro, is Lego is going to drive Hasbro, and if Playmobil gets into it, Playmobil is going to drive Hasbro, because they're going to feel that competition more than anything that happens on the standard friendly local yeah. game store level.
Well, I guess my thing with the Lego games, at least the ones that I'm familiar with, and I won't say this is true of all buildable games, and maybe not even all Lego games, was that the building of the Legos wasn't necessarily intrinsic to the playing of the game.
Right.
And I thought that was a bit, that might have been what I would consider a design flaw. On the one extreme, you don't want to have Mousetrap, right, which no one has ever actually played, right? You just actually build the Mousetrap. But by the same token, you've got Legos. I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me.
This is their first experimental years out there with it. The Lego engineers.
Are you being a Lego apologist?
No. I'm being a predictor on the Lego end. I think Lego's actually one of those people that's going to come out there and break open the market for the mass market. I think they're going to get the crossover product. I think they've got the best. First of all, they're in Europe, and they are in touch with all of the good board game designers. Second, they have the Lego engineers, which are brilliant guys, you know, and it's literally engineers to craft those sets. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to put the two of them together. You know, they tried the Battling Tops one this year. That's their new ninja one that they just launched. You know, Bakugan's got something going on along like that. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I don't know that this one's the one. But what I will say is, this is Lego's new direction. Lego really wants to break into this market big time and make this a major part of their market.
All right.
I think that that's going to happen. I won't say in 2011, though.
Okay. Well, I just want to say I think you're smoking crack. Because I from what I've seen of the Lego designs, they're targeting 6 to 8 year olds. They are not going to produce a crossover product of any interest to a heavy Euro gamer. All right. If you enjoyed Puerto Rico or Cuba, you're not going to enjoy RoboChamp.
I won't.
And I don't think that there is going to be a comfortable middle ground a la Axis and Allies where gamers and non-gamers agree that this is a fun game. I think that Lego might come up with, it might continue to go after the game market, but they're going to have two things working against them. One, their discounts are terrible. And two, their game design philosophy is not ages 12 and up, okay? And that's what moves the hobby market. Their game philosophy, their game design is going to be 6 to 12. And it's going to be it's much, much, much more oriented towards the youthful mass market. So I do not.
I was going to say I understand that, but I think Lego's trying to find that other market, that older market, which is why I think they're going to try with this.
I think they would be better off coming up with a rule set for their Star Wars games, or for their Star Wars model.
Their Star Wars models.
Or a miniatures combat system based on, you know, all the little yellow Lego guys. But anyways,
there may be yet.
Seriously, Rhett, some of these designs that they released, one of them was a rehash of Mastermind.
Yes, I know.
They did not. There was not a lot of amazing game design going into these Lego kits. So, all right, let's move on to our reader predictions. I didn't say anyways.
I know. Okay. Now you did.
Yeah, I did. So hold on a second. Let me get some of the quarter. All right. From Mr. Dan Glovier, we have the following. I predict that a mobile device, iPad or other, tie-in with a board game will emerge as a solid seller. Dan, I love you. I think you're a little behind the curve on this. I want to point this out, is that one, Dan has it absolutely right. The iPad board game market is huge. Okay. It wasn't so big on the iPhone, but games like Carcassonne, now I play Carcassonne on my iPhone, but playing it on the iPad, it's a very different experience. And yeah. That's a huge market. There's everyone is already rushing. I won't say rushing. There are already many, many, many board game conversion titles on the market. Catan's out there. Carcassonne's out there. There are a group of others. I want to say that Days of Wonder has, is it Memoir 44? One of their things is now going online. So there's a lot of, this is, I think, a good call. I don't know that it's going to emerge as a, because it's going to break in the board game market first, I don't think that this is going to be a trendsetter, so to speak. You know what I mean? I don't think it's going to go from iPad to board game. Okay, if that makes sense.
I guess
Angry Birds already did that.
I was going to say, with ignoring Angry Birds in that one, otherwise he's got you.
Yeah, no, it's but I do think that this that definitely that's a huge, huge thing. It ties in more. We talked about the PDF market growing. We're talking about, you're talking about virtual tabletop. Dan's talking about iPad. You can see where all this is going. The other thing that Dan says is, I predict that RPGs will scuffle. Don't know if he means they're going to duke it out or just that they're going to scuffle along at their current pace. I think that Pathfinder may have found its level, and unless something appears out of nowhere from WotC, and again, that's I've heard the same criticism from Pathfinder online, is that not so much have they shot their last bolt, but basically, really, they've done a lot in a short time. What are they going to do to keep interest up in the product? They have some neat things for 2011, but maybe it's not going to keep blowing the doors out, or maybe it's going to stabilize.
Yeah, I go kind of back to that because of what we are seeing or not seeing, so to speak, from Wizards. I'm kind of worried that Wizards may just give up the ghost here, and that could be really weird. I mean, the idea that D&D would let Pathfinder entrench deeper, to me, is a possibility. I'm just not sure that Hasbro really knows where to go. So we'll leave that.
Put a percentage on it. Wizards of the Coast sells the D&D license to FFG.
Oh,
in 2011.
I don't think it'll go to FFG. I think it'll actually go to Peter. I think Peter will outbid anybody for it.
Peter Atkinson?
Peter Atkinson. I think Peter Atkinson is the most likely candidate, or Paizo, given the link there. But I would say that those are more likely. And the chances of them selling in 2011?
Still slim?
No, I think it's higher. I think it's actually increasing.
All right.
I would say 30% chance that they'll dump this license this year.
Ooh. All right. So, okay. Interesting. Red, I'd put it at about between 5 and 15%.
I understand.
I think it's still a money engine for them.
I have this niggling at the back of my neck about 5th edition for 2012.
Yeah, I think that would be a more likely response. But all right, let's move on. Dan's got a couple more predictions, and then we're going to get into Alan's. Dan also says, someone will take note of Catan's continued success and will, quote, vanilla, unquote, it to make it more palatable to the general public. Could end up being sports-based or music-based, something more modern than sheep/wood/whatever. I think that might be a possibility. On the other hand, with Catan, almost, I don't know. I mean, you do a graphic redo on it, and it's, I don't know.
Well, for years, I used to say Adolf Flickdick, one of my favorite games. What a horrible name, by the way, for the non-Euro market.
Well, even the English title by Hook or by Crook wasn't all that great.
Yeah. Exactly. They never did really come up with a great one. And it's got another title now. I've forgotten its new title now. One of the coolest game mechanics, totally, totally wrong marketing on the graphics end of this game, to make it appeal to a broader audience. If they would just dump what you're collecting, I mean, basically you're collecting sets. It can be anything. They need to get if they'd have gotten the graphics right on this one, I think that that's, as Dan predicts here with Catan, you could have brought it into a much bigger market. If you were collecting baseball cards and comic books and mainstream things that people were interested in.
Yes, rather than the objects that were on the cards in the game. All right, so I think that I don't know if that's going to happen in 2011, though. I apologize. I am not going to Toy Fair this year, where ideally I would get some insight as to whether or not this is actually going to happen. Not like Hasbro takes me in their little private room anyway, but anyways, it should be an interesting
I thought conference. You'd work that out by now.
Yeah, the only reason they're going to take me to back room is to beat the crap out of me. Conventions will continue to see a rise in attendance, a significant rise as they finally start to market to the mainstream gamer population. I think that's not too far off the mark. I think attendance will rise, certainly as the economy bounces back from completely terrible. The wild card on that is that I think you're going to see... Well, one, I don't know that Gen Con markets to the mainstream gamer population, but certainly we've seen Origins doing very well doing that. So I think Dan's on to something here.
Yeah, Origins is definitely moving that direction, and having seen the new restrictions this year on Origins, Origins is definitely taking more of a page from Gen Con and tightening its belt regarding quality. They're going to demand more quality out of their
exhibitors.
Well, not their exhibitors per se, but their presenters, the gamer people who are putting out games for them. A little tighter, a little harder to get badges if you don't get good responses. So they're going to be basically catering towards more mainstream, the same way Gen Con does. You can't go out there and put it on an experimental game with the hopes that you can tie up enough people to get yourself a free badge out of it. You're going to have a better fill on the number of players for the game that you're climbing in order to get your free badge, which I think means that you have to go more mainstream, things that you can count on. I know I can get people to show up for this one. So,
oh, gotcha. You're talking for the GMs.
I'm talking for the GMs, okay. And all those people that run the non-exhibitor run events.
Okay, gotcha. Yes. All right. All right, let's talk about by the way, I want to thank in particular Alan Kaiser, who wrote a really, really great and unfortunately long letter with his five predictions in it. And I wanted to save it for last because he had some really good thoughts on this. And Alan, we're not going to be able to read the entire letter. And of course, since we can't really post it so much on the Purple Pawn website for fear of crapping up the stream, so to speak. He's got some really great thoughts on some stuff. And so we're going to go through this and
we'll hit the highlights.
Yeah, we're going to hit the highlights on this. But Alan provided some extremely well thought out stuff on this. And for his first point is commercials on TV for board games. Now, his point is that with Game of Thrones coming out on HBO and FFG having the Game of Thrones board games, Battle of Westeros, the LCG, he thinks FFG is going to go to TV for hobby board games. He said, no, nobody's done this since Uberplay tried this a few years back. Also, with the number of zombie games out there, and we've got the new zombie series, Walking Dead, he thinks that's going to happen in 2011.
I don't know. I'm cautious on this because... Boy, that's a lot of investment.
It is, and it's...
And you'd have to have more mainstream games, I think, to capitalize on it. Everything that we've talked... Everything that was mentioned in FFG, none of that would be really very effective at crossing into the mainstream. Now, FFG being FFG, I could see them creating a George R. R. Martin mainstream game to just make that crossover. And then maybe, yes, they will get the advertising.
It might. The problem with the TV advertising is that... Were you there when Mike Gray from Hasbro was talking about that basically that you're going to have to spend about $4 million to launch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the amount of advertising you have to do has increased greatly.
And
the expense is still high.
Yeah, and you know, the problem with all of this literally is even anybody with the exception of Hasbro / Wizards and a few of the others, I don't think they had the cash flow. I mean,
the amount of revenue required to do television advertising is at least near the $1 million mark. And boy, can you do a lot of publishing with $1 million.
Yeah, the likely candidate for this would be Wizards of the Coast, and I don't see them necessarily doing it. So we'll disagree with Alan on that one. Now, his number two point here is publishers will release fewer games this year. And I want to read a little bit of his letter here directly. He says, there's been an undercurrent of discontent lately among longtime board gamers about the lack of originality in the mechanics and theme of many board games coming out in the last several years. Oh, it's another worker placement game, they say. Another medieval guy staring at us from the top of the box. Another area control game. Board gamers aren't stupid, and they're looking for something new and fresh. If a publisher's going to hand them a rethemed game with the same mechanics that were in last year's game, then don't be surprised if the gaming consumer gets a little wary of buying that game without first trying it out. And he goes on to talk about this at length, but he cites our interview with Z-Man about how they came out with almost 40 titles this year, and none of them were breakout titles. Those may disagree with me. I think the big game this year was Troyes, for him, but it wasn't. Let's face it, Pandemic, Dungeon Lords, Agricola, those were big hits. This one, not this year, not so much. And this is one of those things where we've been talking about the number of titles coming out. And now, you and I disagree with him on the subject. Right now, Rhett, you nailed this earlier in the pre-show when we were talking about it. You said...
I said that I think he's got it right when it comes to the consumer and retailer response. Unfortunately, I think the manufacturers are going to be on the flip side of this. They're going to still produce tons of games. This is a big market they're all trying to capitalize on and expand into because it was very successful again in 2010, which is the only thing I disagree with them on, is not that they will produce less, but the consumers and by virtue the retailers will be more leery, more cautious, and as I said earlier, fast in, fast out in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think that he's right about let's call it title fatigue.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that there are so many new titles that even the hardest core folks are having a hard time keeping track of them. That said, speaking of title fatigue, his number three point, no more weird names, and I think I might agree with him on this. Excuse me. He says, when Z-Man released the Spikerstadt in late 2010, it raised a few eyebrows. Reviewers commented on the name repeatedly, and I'm sure many a game store owner said, you want me to put what on my shelf? Euro games have had many a strange title over the years, but in recent years, things have been getting a little stranger than usual. Games like Hansa Teutonica, Aegitia, Macau, and this is my personal favorite, is Alea Iacta Est. And others have people scratching their heads. As any marketing person will tell you, the name of a product is important. Now, he goes on to talk about this at length. But he's got a good point.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
when you go into the game store and you're like, oh, I want the one that it's something. Yeah, right.
I mean,
Google for Alea Iacta Est.
Well, and, you know, as the one I spun earlier, Adelphi Flichtig. You go ahead and spell it. If I pronounce it correctly, there's no way you're going to spell it the way it's.
I actually own a copy. So.
I might
get Adele correct.
We're all in agreement here. But unfortunately, it seems that maybe the guys who are writing over in Europe, be it the Italians, be it the Germans, maybe they're married to their title. Oddly enough, I think the Poles are going to start to continue to advance more titles. Poland seems to be the new battleground for upcoming designers.
Well, I would say Czechoslovakia, but yeah, Poland, Eastern Europe.
Europe then. And I think we'll get stuck with some truly, truly entertaining things to try to twist our mouths.
Well, Remember, please include vowels. All right. Anyways, I think that's an excellent point on his part. I don't know if that's going to change, but certainly to stand out in the marketplace, giving yourself an obscure, well, German or Italian or Latin title is certainly not going to sell the product. In fact, it might not even sell it in, you know, in Germany or, you know, in Europe.
Well, it's certainly the a language where that's not native.
Correct. All right. His number four prediction. More designer diaries for new games. He says, over the years, we've seen a few of these for games here and there. A designer will write about the design process and how the ideas and mechanics came about. Designers like Bruno Feduti have given gamers these little insights into his games for a number of years. Days of Wonder has come up with these for the last several games they've published. And Klaus Tuber, he talks about. And there are, well, we've even had people on the show, right? Was it Chameleon Games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a much bigger trend, in part because it's about, and he mentioned this later on in his thing, it's the need to generate buzz. In a crowded
Absolutely.
Marketplace, you have to get buzz surrounding the title so that people, so you get that push-pull going where the consumer goes into the store and says, I want the Spiekerstocked game that I've been reading about this guy's designing. It sounds really interesting. Because basically, unless that happens, your chances of getting into Alliance Distribution or one of the other major distributors right off the bat is much more difficult. So I think this is a definitely he nails this one. I think we're going to see a lot more of this.
I agree. You know, and part of this is also that the society in general is becoming more comfortable with this, more commonplace, as people who've grown up with this are now entering into the age category where they're going to be designing stuff. You know, this is not a new trend, but those people are now entering in the workforce, the people who have been grown up with this. They started out as, you know, junior high students, and they're now in the workforce. This is just second nature to them. So, yeah, I think we're going to just see more and more of this, not only this year, but in all future years. I think it's almost going to be a requirement.
Yeah, and it's definitely a continuation of, you know, the kind of thing where you can't get enough information about your favorite band or your, you know, favorite movie or whatever. I think this is an extension of that peek behind the scenes type thing. I wholeheartedly think that this is here to stay and that it's a good thing.
Another really good observation on his part.
All right. His fifth prediction and his last, I haven't even looked at the time on the show. I'm assuming this.
I think we're on 2 days now.
Yeah, I think so. Suffice to say, his number five prediction is, this is the year of the game store. And I'm going to read his lead paragraph and then summarize some more of the rest of it. Despite more games being available than ever before, the life of a game store owner has not gotten easier in the last 5 years. The Euro invasion has brought games to an ever-increasing number of people, but that hasn't really translated into more business for brick-and-mortar stores. Online discount game stores have grabbed up a lot of that business. And he says, I predict this year a number of factors will come together that improve the outlook of the brick-and-mortar game store. Now, here's in a nutshell. Cash-strapped states finally get around to forcing online consumers to pay state sales taxes. The increased exposure of more people to games. Settlers is now available at Target. And he mentioned some other stuff, mainstream papers reviewing lists of good games, efforts like the brick and mortar program for RPG PDFs to get people to shop at brick and mortar stores. That would be, by the way, when you pre-order the game at your game store, you get, you also get the download, Mayfair's efforts to limit the amount an online store can discount its games, he thinks can help. And, he thinks, and this is one that I think is this is, I think, one of his best points on this bit about the local game stores doing well. He thinks we're going to begin to see some of the online game stores disappear. He says a combination of the economy and a glut of mediocre games will make the thin margin that online stores make. He's going to make it so that it's not enough to pay the bills.
I can see that one definitely taking its toll out there. What I will say is that from my local friendly game stores, this was the second best year ever. for my local game store.
Wait, no, no, wait. Gross dollars, net dollars, or percentage profit?
Percentage profit.
Okay.
And this is this was a very odd year. The Chicagoland area is probably one of the worst hit areas for unemployment. And it's
Sorry, I just, had to
yeah you
leave
can't
Michigan
you,
to find a
yeah
job.
the, well yeah I was gonna say I said one all no
Okay, all right.
all right
Yeah, well.
yeah And any case, the situation is, though, that even with all that, and a number of game stores opening up locally to add more competition to my friendly local,
Yes, one just
it's
opened at Downers Grove.
yeah I, you know as I say, though, this still proves to be another really great year, because people are coming out and looking for stuff. And one of the things that he pointed out earlier, about the consumer, consumers are wanting to see things before they buy.
Yes.
You can't do that online. And in addition, if you have a brick and mortar store, and this goes back to, we talked a lot about a prediction, so let's go back to our little business end of our side here. This goes to all the retailers who are out there listening. If you provide space for people to play things so that they again have the opportunity to review them, look them over, enjoy each other's company, et cetera, you're serving a lot of different things. You're going to actually get people to come in because they want to know if that game is worth playing. Should they drop the $50 to play that next game? Oh, look, all these other people are playing it. Or I'm happy not to buy that one because it's not really in my line, but I still want to drop my $50. Let's find a different thing.
Yeah, the one thing that they have discovered, the one thing they've discovered about online commerce, there's been a multitude, but one of the things that they find out is people research online and then they go and buy it local.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily a game related thing. This is with TVs, with a lot of different things, with books. All of these things, yes, there's a huge online sales for a lot of these different things, but even with computers and everything else, they research it online and then they go to the Best Buy or the local bookstore or the local game store to make the purchase. And the reason is they want to hold it in their hand, they want to feel, what it's like, they want to gauge it, they want to look at it and touch it before they buy it. I think this is my personal opinion. I think that the margins in online retail have gotten to the point of ludicrously low. I saw, I don't want to single anybody out as being bad or anything like that, and this is not bad. Thoughthammer was, all of their products are 30 to 40% off. And I think they were advertising war games as all being 35 to 40% off on one site that I saw them advertising on. Now, assuming that they're buying these at approximately 50%, if you're selling at 40% off, that's 10%. That's a distributor margin on a good day.
Yeah.
And if somebody orders over $100 and they're paying for shipping, or there's, plus you've got, boxes and things like that. That's tight. You've got to move a lot of product at a 10% margin to make it make any sense.
You
Now,
and you can't have and you can't have failures.
no, you can't have dead inventory sitting around. And but being online though, it's right. That's the whole thing, the long tail. The idea is you got to have one of everything because that's your competitive advantage. You can stock everything. And it's not like a lot of online stores where you can drop ship from the manufacturer. You've got to have that game in your warehouse to sell. And I again, so I think that's going to be as those margins drop. I know shipping costs went up. The book rate, by the way, on shipping costs went up about 5%. I think UPS and FedEx raised the rates. The discounted rate that these kind of businesses are paying did not go up by anywhere near that much. But we're going to see shipping costs continue to rise as gasoline and diesel stay high. So there's a lot of factors that are hitting these guys. Here's the problem. I don't know that this bet is going to result in a boon for the brick and mortar stores. I think the brick and mortar stores that are doing well, basically, if you had a good year in 2011, you'll have, or in 2010, you're going to have a good year in 2011 as a local game store. I don't know that if we're going to see a boomlet of new stores opening, and part of that is how tight the capital markets are right now. One, interest rates are rising off of the rock bottom 4% mortgage rate that they had been. And it's still hard to get money to launch a new business. I think it's going to be difficult given the economy to open stores. Now, the good news, by the way, I'm sorry, I'm going on and on about the back end economics on this. The good news is that commercial real estate prices on that should be dropping. Right, they're not dropping as fast as a lot of people thought. But if you're going to open a game store in 2011, the price per square foot that you're going to pay for your lease should be going down. That said, it's still a tough time to open a game store. All right, I'm done on that. You can go.
Yeah, I think he's pointed out a number of important areas here. The big one to me is the whole idea of taxes. Right now, there's a suit from Texas.
You're in Illinois. How do you feel about new state taxes and the take?
Yeah, go get them. You know, go find the revenue that's already there and get them to, you know, give it to you. Anyway, the situation is, as I said, in Texas, and I believe it's Kentucky, where Amazon is being sued by the states for back taxes to, at least in Texas, I know specifically, to the tune of $300 million. You know, with their proposal of, no, you're not an internet company, you are actually shipping out of my state, you owe us the money. Yeah. And they're easier. The strange thing works this way about all cross-state commerce, which is all cross-state commerce does require that you pay taxes on it. Generally speaking, the reason that you're not charged taxes when you buy something from out of state is because you are personally responsible for paying that tax yourself. I'm suspecting that the majority of people don't know or don't care, and are not going to declare this, which I'm sure the states recognize as well, which means that what they have to do is go and find those people who have big enough incomes out of it to go chase them down. It's easier to go chase down Amazon for $300 million than it is to try to find 300 million Texans, you know, who each owe you $10.
Yeah. And that's I think that's a 2012 story, though.
Absolutely. I do think it's going to take a while.
We're getting I think that they're going to need some support from the federal government on that to make that more of a reality. I think the big states will do it. But I think that with an anti-tax Congress coming in, it should be interesting to see what kind of support they get. Now, this is more of an executive branch support thing, so it might actually happen. But I think that's a story for 2012. But it's definitely, if I'm running around living on a less than 10% margin, and all of a sudden I've got to charge somebody 6 to 9%, all right, I lose my competitive edge, right? My shipping costs are going up. I have to tax people. All of a sudden, hey, you know, what, I'm only saving 10%? Why don't I just go buy it at Joe's Game Hut rather than buying it from Funnigan? So there's definitely a meme that is developing on this. And I don't know if it's going to be 2011, but it's definitely a good point. Anyways, sorry, I'm done. Oh, I said anyways, damn.
There's another quarter.
Yeah, I think that's two now.
You must be up to about $4.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Anyways, all right, Alan, thank you very much for that Wealth Out letter. Dan, thank you as well. By the way, our good friend Dan Jensen from Sweden sent us an email just saying Happy New Year. Dan, Happy New Year as well. And that is it for this week's show. Now, that said, how can other people send us their comments?
Well, They can. If I
Did
get
you
my
lose track
stuff
of it in
together.
the show
I
notes?
did. I did. I did. I did. I did. They can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. You can phone us at 773-634-9377. Jingle coming. Or...
Oh, well, this is just so they can follow us. That's purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed for the Paper Money only RSS feed. And I can't tell you enough how excellent it is to incorporate our listeners' stuff into the show. For one thing, it saves us from having to talk on and on and on about stuff that we don't know if you're interested in. So, yeah, definitely send us stuff. We'd love to hear from you. And like I said, hey, as Alan and Dan will testify, hey, we definitely put it on the show.
You know, and one thing we probably haven't really put out there is if you have questions, we have a lot of comments, but if you have questions or areas that you'd like us to cover, give us a call, give us a comment, send us an email, whatever. We have another 42 shows at least probably still in us. And, you know, if there's things you'd like to see us cover, let us know.
We could do that. So, all right, upcoming stuff we have.
Minor thing, New York Toy Fair.
Yeah, New York Toy Fair coming up first part of February. And, again, I know our good friend Robert from the Purple Pawn is going to be going to that show. I will, well, let's, I'll probably not be going this year. And I have dear friends who are going, but I am not. So this year's New York Toy Fair, you know, it's sad too because I'm getting invites from everybody. I got Mary Cousins invited me to the party that her organization throws on Tuesday night, which is really like the best party of New York Toy Fair week.
Well, you just need to send an acceptance saying sure, and could you send me tickets to get there too? Airline tickets to get there too.
Yeah, that would be the thing. And but yeah, so it's kind of sad I'm not going to New York Toy Fair. On the other hand, every time I go to New York Toy Fair, I manage to find a new dingiest hotel in, you know, in Manhattan. So, I mean, it's in Manhattan, so I can't complain. But
you just did.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, all right. that
yeah,
and I'm
well,
glad to be dodging the blizzards, right? Usually
yeah.
New York Toy Fair, there's a blizzard on the way in or the way out.
Yeah,
so,
and... I have to say that yet again, I am not going to the New York Toy Fair. One of these years, I will actually make the New York Toy Fair. Probably 2012, 2013, I'm thinking. More likely 2013, after the end of the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're not like a New York Toy Fair guy. You're more of the GTS guy.
The GTS guy. And, you know, GTS is not that far away.
No, it's not. Is it end of March this year? Or is it in April?
It is the end of March yeah. again this year, I believe. I know we were doing some planning around it. I may actually have to be forced to go out there and work yet again. It's such a hardship. And this time, though, on the other hand, I will get to take one of my colleagues who's never been to Las Vegas or to the GTS show. And show him the ropes.
By the way, folks, for those of you in the industry who go to GTS and have to work a booth, best show ever to work a booth at. Because, like, the floor doesn't open till 10 and it closes at 5.
Is it 10? I thought it was noon.
Yeah, I mean, it's like ridiculously short hours. But New York Toy Fair, you're on the floor from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m.
Yeah, this is like 6 hours on the floor.
Yeah, it's like 11 to 5 or noon to 6. I mean, it's like really short, and it's never particularly crowded.
No, it's actually between the combination of the shows, seminars, which they're, depending on, you know, what your qualities are in retail, there's always some seminar that you could be attending that's probably useful for you. And when there's not a time for you to be in a seminar, there's plenty of time to go through and cover the floor and talk to the manufacturers yep. and hear their spins on everything and give your input on stuff because, frankly, they do listen.
Yes, they do. All right, that said, take us out of here, Rhett.
Well, our next show will be January 28th, 2 weeks. No lollygagging for us this time around.
That's right, and we'll be talking, of course, about New York Toy Fair.
Well, that's all for this show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And anyways, I'm Ben Clark.
Now $4.25 in the hole.